Hello, witches and good spirits. Welcome to another episode of Yorkshire Ghost Tales on the Bell Witch podcast. My name is Spindle Shanks McScrew, and every month I will bring you a spooky story often placed in Yorkshire as the runner of the Yorkshire Ghost Tours. We run ghost tours in the towns of Skipton and Otley, and also Leeds City Centre. So if you fancy more where this came from, do book a ticket with us. If you're ready for a scary story, pull up a pew and lend me your ear. I've a story to tell you that you don't want to hear, but I'm going to tell you it anyway. It's the 3rd of February today, so I thought, with dry January having drawn to a close at long last, if you partook, that I would read a story today which is based around drinking, and so we can relish in its darkness. This story comes from a book by the British Library, Tales of the Weird. They've got several books in their series, and they're all fantastic, and they're full of short stories from throughout history. This book in particular is called Dead Drunk: Tales of Intoxication and Demon Drinks, and it was edited by Pam Locke, who's a lecturer in the English department at the University of Bristol and co-director of the Drinking Studies Network, and her research focuses on drinking and the drunkard in Victorian fiction and culture. What a fascinating thing to study. Now, this tale comes from 1886 and is by an author known only as E.E.L. E.E.L. published anonymously in the Temperance Mirror, and it's likely that the author of this story was a woman, which is an educated guess from Pam Locke herself as a Victorianist, because, as she says in the introduction, so many women of this period published anonymously, partly because so many writers for temperance publications were female. Now, a temperance publication is basically an anti-drink story designed to warn the reader about the dangers of alcohol and drunkenness, and it was a wide-reaching campaign against the production, trade and consumption of alcohol in Britain, which was made up of hundreds of local and national groups and linked to a range of international associations. Now, I'm not saying that I'm anti-drink, quite the opposite, in fact, but it's interesting how drunkenness was sort of rife throughout the Victorian period. So, this story itself is called Kitty's Dream and its results. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy the voices that I'm going to bestow upon you from now as well. Here we go. Right. Pour yourself something nice, your favourite tipple, and relish in this quite horrible story. The new district visitor, Mrs. March, had nearly completed her round of calls on a certain Tuesday morning when she suddenly thought of one old couple whom she had not yet seen, but who she heard were accounted eccentric and a little bit queer by their neighbours. Having just half an hour to spare, Mrs. Marsh retraced the steps she had taken in an opposite direction and knocked at the door of number 9 Prospect Row. It was immediately opened by a pleasant-looking old man who gazed inquiringly at the strange lady before him. "Are you Mr. May?" she said in her cheery, winning voice.
"That's me, ma'am. Thomas May, at your service."
"May I come in, then?" she inquired. "I am the new district visitor, and I want to get to know all my people well." The old man opened the door wider and said, "Walk in, lady, by all means. The missus is out, but I'm pleased to see you." Mrs. Marsh went in and sat down and chatted away brightly to old May with the ready sympathy and tact that won her many real friends in all ranks of life, and she was just coming away when her eyes fell on something on the mantelpiece, and she turned and gave an earnest look at the old man. It was not strange that her attention had been riveted, for the centre ornament on the mantel shelf was an old black bottle, placed conspicuously forward and labelled unsweetened gin.
"You be wondering, ma'am," said Thomas, "what that their curious ornament means, and it's puzzled many a one afore you. But sometime, if you like to hear the reason of it, I'll tell you with real pleasure."
"Are you and your wife teetotalers, Mr. May?" said Mrs. Marsh, gently.
"Indeed we be, ma'am, thank the Lord, though it was not always so."
"Will you tell me the story now? I have time to listen," said Mrs. Marsh.
"Right willingly, ma'am, and here comes the missus," he added, as he went to the door and opened it for his wife, who was tidy but delicate, and weak-looking woman. Wow. As she came in, he said, "This is the new district lady, Mary Ann, and I'm just going to tell her the meaning of that bottle up there, so come and sit you down and stop me if I go wrong in the telling of it."
Mrs. Marsh shook hands with the poor woman, who smiled and looked ashamed and glad and sad all at once.
"It were like this, ma'am," began old Thomas, delighted to spin his yarn to a fresh listener. "It were like this. Years ago, when our Kitty, that's our only child, who's married now to the foreman of the steelworks yonder, and a likelier lass I'll be bound you never see. Well, as I was saying, our Kitty was only 12 years old come the next January, when one October night I was at home alone along over. The wife there was out. Ah, ma'am, in those days we wasn't what we is now, was we, Mary Ann? We both drank hard, ma'am, hard and Alice. And the wife there was worse than me, weren't you, wife? Alice drunk. And the poor little maid afeared for her life of us. Well, ma'am, one night she there," pointing to his wife, "was out on the drink, and I was at home already half seas over, when I sees Kitty come in, and I says, 'Kitty, fetch me that here bottle off the top shelf in cupboard, and a glass, you know the one I mean, quick now.' The child looked all startled like, and she says,
'Oh, father, what you do without it, do we now?'
'What do you mean, child?' says I, angrily. 'A talking to your father like that, fetch it this instant,' says I, 'or I'll break every bone in your body, I will.'
'No, Dad,' says she,
quite firm like,
'I can't. You must get it yourself if you want it.'
Then, ma'am, I hurls such words at her as I can't repeat to the likes of you, for you see, ma'am, as how I knew I couldn't walk straight across that here floor, and in me worst times I was allus kind of shamed like for the child to see me reel and stagger with the drink. So I says awful words to her, and with a fearful threat I orders her to bring the gin or suffer for it. Ma'am, that here little maid of mine, she stood it all quite quiet. And then she just come and knelt down by me as I was sitting by the table and,
'Dad,'
says she, looking up into me face,
'will you listen to a dream I had last night, and you'll know then why I can't fetch the gin for you?'
Something in the child's face made me quiet, and I lays me head down and says, 'Go on, Kitty, I'll listen, out with it.' Oh, ma'am, never will I forget that night. It was just awful to hear the child speak so solemn as she did, and so earnest too. Forgive me, ma'am, it undoes me even now." And the poor old man had to wipe the tears off his wrinkled cheeks before he could go on.
"Dad," says she, "Dad, I'd only been asleep a little while, I think, when I dreamed as how you told me to fetch the bottle as I've often done afore, just as you did tonight, and I went. And when I opened the cupboard door, I heard an awful laugh, an awful chuckling laugh, which set me all of a tremble with its terrible sound. And when I looked out the bottle, oh, father, there was an awful blue face glaring at me out of it, and a dreadful grin it had, and I was so horror-struck I couldn't move, and the fearful face kept grinning. I could hear a muttering, like, till I couldn't stand it no longer. And in awful fear, I clutched hold of the bottle and pulled out the cork, and the face seemed to come right up out of the bottle. And then long, skinny arms with lean hands and fingers all came creeping out. And the dreadful laugh rang out loud and the lips moved. And I plainly heard the words, "I've got him! I've got him! And her too! Safe and sound! They're mine! They've sold themselves, body and soul, to the devil! And my work is not lost this time! Come on, come on, both of you! You're mine! You're mine!" And then came the awful laugh again, and I thought I'd fainted right away. And when I come to, with you throwing some cold water on me face, I was sitting up in bed in a cold sweat all over. And I can't forget, and I'll never forget that awful dream. Oh, Father, it was so fearful. It seems just as fearful now. Now you know why I just couldn't fetch the bottle. Oh, Father, dear Father.
And poor Kitty just wailed and sobbed, and as she knelt there, I just sobbed too. And when she heard me, she grew quiet and played out loud in a little childish words for her mother and for me. Then, ma'am, she got on me knee, and with her arms round my neck, she just begged and prayed of me to give up the drink and be a good father to her. And, ma'am, I did love her, though the drink made such a beast of me. And I promised, and we prayed again, and then we'd said that we'd do whatever we could with mother there too. And, ma'am, the Lord be praised, I've never touched no drink since that night, and under God 'tis Kitty's work. Many the struggle we had, ma'am, the poor wife's was the hardest, you see. I'd never been quite so bad, for somehow the women seem to drink deeper than us when they do begin. But she's all square now, ain't you, wife? Kitty's happiness and joy with us kept us as much as anything. Especially when any old companions come in a-jeering and taunting and a-trying to make us give in and begin again. Kitty'd sit by with a bright face and looking so confident-like that we'd a-scorn to give in. I do believe, with her eye upon us, well, ma'am, when I'd kept it a month, for the poor wife was a-struggling hard and a-succeeding too, I takes that very same bottle and I seals it up and I sticks it up there on that shelf, and there it's been ever since, and it reminds us of God's goodness. And oh, what Kitty done, and I'm prouder of it standing there, ma'am, than anything else we've got. Mrs. Marsh was wiping sympathetic tears away, and now she said earnestly, "You must tell this story to help others who are tempted as you were. But do you never feel now, either of you, any fear of giving way to the love of drink again?"
"Never, ma'am," says the old man. "For myself, I ain't a bit afeard. I can smell it. And not feel no inclination to drink it. But Mary Ann there, she can't do that yet, can you?"
"No, ma'am," said the wife earnestly. "I'm all right here, but I'm downright afeard of going within smell or sight of drink, or of being without Thomas here to help me."
"Well, ma'am," said Thomas, with a fond look at his wife, "she's fought wonderful hard, and I don't believe as how the Lord will take me away until she's strong enough to be left alone."
Mrs. Marsh's gentle voice said, "Don't be afraid, Mrs. May. As long as you pray and try, our dear Saviour will help you." And with many more encouraging and cheering words, she left the little house, where she had learnt still more of the immense struggle to be gone through by those who have once succumbed to the awful love of drink, and of the sympathy needed to encourage them to persevere in giving it up. Years afterwards, Mrs. Marsh, who, soon after hearing the May's story, had to go abroad, revisited Prospect Row, and found that the old man was dead, and that his widow lived with Kitty and her children, and that she was now strong and thorough in her hatred and renunciation of drink, and never tired of telling her grandchildren the story of their mother's dream and God's blessing on it. Well, there you have it. A little bit more, I suppose, about temperance stories. Apparently, this one is quite interesting because of the nature of the ghost story, and many of them don't really follow through with gothic themes, but this one does, which makes it pretty cool. So as Pam Locke says, Kitty's Dream is one of the only temperance tales that she has come across that includes a supernatural representation of the demon drink, as it was commonly known by campaigners. Now, it's the story of an idealised and angelic child converting their drunken parents, which was very common in this genre of fiction. And the temperance movement had an extremely active youth movement who were known as Blue Ribbon, created specifically to recruit children as young as possible and persuade them to recruit others, adults and children alike. Temperance stories tended to be melodramatic, so you might think the Gothic would be an ideal genre for their writers, but this often conservative movement tended to favour confessional-style narratives and moral tales designed to make their readers weep over the fates of the doomed drinkers whose ruined bodies and devastated families littered their pages. The demonic dream Kitty retells to persuade her parents to abstain makes it very unusual. Drink is personified, or rather demonified, when it literally becomes the demon drink, and gloats over her parents' helplessness and threatens her with its grotesque, creeping hands and fingers. So there we go, something a little bit different this month, but hey, I'll drink to that. And I'll see you at one of our many haunted pubs on one of our tours, hopefully. Just make sure you find the spirits before they find you. I'm not really one for conservative movements, and so, yeah, I'm going to have a big bottle of vino now. However, if you did do Dry January, well done. I hope it went well. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next month with something even spookier. Goodbye.